Mr. President, starring Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, Edward Arnold. Mr. President at home in the White House, the elected leader of our people, our fellow citizen and neighbor. These are little-known stories of the men who've lived in the White House, dramatic, exciting events in their lives that you and I so rarely hear. True human stories of Mr. President.
We'll present Edward Arnold as Mr. President in just a moment. But first, listen to this story and see if you recognize the president in it. As a boy, he was anemic and weak, and it took many years of ranch life to build his body into powerful manhood. His love of sports during his presidency led him to engage in private boxing matches with young men around him. During one of those matches, the president's left eye was struck, and the blow damaged the optic nerve. Shortly thereafter, the president lost the sight of his left eye. This might have ruined the career of the young Army officer who had struck him. With this fact in mind, the president kept the world ignorant of what happened to him for many years. Only in his autobiography did he tell the story. Do you know that president? That's right, it was Theodore Roosevelt. But now listen to this detailed story of events in the life of a president and see if you can name the man it is about. In just a moment, Edward Arnold.
Now, Edward Arnold as Mr. President. Let's visit him in the White House. It is Sunday and the old mansion is resting quietly after a busy week. We walk through the great doors under the presidential seal, across the foyer, and down the long hall to the president's study.
Oh, hello. Well, come in and sit down, won't you? This tradition of many years standing here at the White House on the second floor is reserved for the president's family. But up here, there's privacy, and the president can be just himself. But can he shut out the affairs of a nation by shutting a door? Later on, of course, I'll tell you which president this happened to, but meanwhile, you may be able to guess. Well, right from the beginning, the problems of my administration began. There was my cabinet. All sorts of pressures were exerted in favor of many men. I had my own ideas, and I proceeded to put them into effect. Among the men I called in was Judge Eben Hoar of Massachusetts. An honest, truthful man, if ever I met one. And a fine lawyer and judge in addition. Welcome, Judge. Welcome to Washington.
Thank you, Mr. President. I was, if I may say so, more than honored by your invitation to join the cabinet. I was amazed.
Well, how so? Your brother in the Senate has only the best to say of you. And the entire Massachusetts get a delegation here in Washington, in Congress and out, are most pleased at my choice. General Rawlins, our Secretary of War, was the most emphatic in your...
You know so little of him, only two brief meetings.
Why? And I know your record on the Massachusetts bench.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Judge, do you accept?
I came here, Mr. President, because you asked me, and because I thought that a word or two from me might carry some weight in favor of our Governor Boutwell. There's a man who really should be in your cabinet, sir.
Well, I've offered Governor Boutwell a post, Judge. And why do you speak for him?
Why am I doing a John Alden, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's hardly accepted practice to have two men from the same state in one cabinet. That doesn't sit well with Congress, Mr. President. And an offended Congress has the tendency to behave like an offended... Well, if you'll excuse the metaphor, like an offended and very balky mule.
Yeah. Well, I've had some experience with mules, Judge, in the Army and out of it. You leave the Congress to me. Now, suppose we both think this over until tomorrow, Judge.
As you wish, Mr. President.
When I gained a president in this family, I didn't expect to lose a husband.
No, I'm sorry, Julia.
Must you bring the office upstairs with you, dear?
Well, not as a permanent procedure, I hope. But this problem of the cabinet...
Why should that be a problem? Why not appoint the best men for the jobs and have done with it?
If it were only as simple as that.
I should think that would be the best for the country at large.
Perhaps, but on the other hand, if I offend Congress, for instance, they can refuse some badly needed legislation. And that would not be the best for the country.
But if the men in the cabinet are wise and honest, as John Rawlins and Jack Cox are...
Yes, yes, of course. But they, too, are supposed to represent the nation, all sections of it, not just their own interests.
I see. Jobs. Patronage again.
Yes, again and again. I'm getting mighty tired of that sort of thing, Julian. I won't do it. I'll not give in. I'll appoint the best men I know of, no matter where they come from. And we'll see what can be done about it. By anyone, any place. Now there, Judge Horace, your commissioner's attorney general. And I sincerely trust you will not refuse it.
This is your final decision, Mr. President.
It's more than that. It's your call to the colors into the service of the nation as a whole.
In that light, then, Mr. President, I accept the commission.
Really? Here.
It might make it just the least bit more official if you signed this commission, sir.
Oh, yes, of course. You see how badly I've been needing someone to watch the legal technicalities for me. There we are.
Thank you, Mr. President. I shall do the best I know.
I'm sure of that.
I hope, sir, that the difficulties with Congress which we envisioned yesterday never materialize.
Trouble from that direction, Judge, most always materializes. You and I had better roll up our sleeves and be ready for a fight. And there's one final matter for our cabinet meeting, gentlemen. There's an opening, as you know, for a Chief Justice of the Federal Court and one in one of our territories. Now, it's my feeling that Joseph Taylor would make an excellent appointee. What's your opinion, gentlemen? Judge Hoare.
What are this man's qualifications, Mr. President?
Well, for one thing, he lost a leg in the recent war. I think a veteran is entitled to every consideration. And I have great sympathy for Taylor.
So do we all. Tragic circumstance, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
But tell me, Mr. President... Is Taylor a lawyer? Has he read law? Has he held any previous position similar to this?
I have no information on that, Judge.
Well, it seems to me, Mr. President, that mere absence of a leg is not a sufficient qualification for a judicial office.
Judge, you're to the point again, as always. I'll consider the matter further. Any further business, gentlemen?
I don't know.
We stand adjourned.
General Rawlins, can't you do something?
Sometimes that's closer to a man than his wife.
I try. Heaven knows I try, but he's wondering if you'd ever leave the office tonight.
Well, I'm sorry if I delayed dinner, Chicken.
Couldn't wait dinner. I can eat cold.
It's a feast to us old campaigners, doesn't it, John? And Julia, my dear, the household of the president never runs on schedule, as it seems, eh?
Will you come inside and eat now?
Oh, let me relax a moment. Feels good to sit down in an easy chair. Quite a day, eh, John?
Yeah, a certain gentleman in Capitol Hill that... Well, frankly, I'd like to have him in a platoon for just a few hours.
I know how you feel, John. Rambunctious, aren't they?
Do you suspect what I do?
Julia, my Secretary of War is a man of suspicious nature. Come on out, say it.
Eben Hoare, that's the answer.
The man Diogenes was looking for.
I like him. His wit is like a razor and honest.
That's it, Julia. Combine those two features and someone is going to get hurt.
And today it was I.
You, John? How did he hurt you?
Well, not directly, Julia, but he wrote the legal phrases for a bill carrying a certain appropriations for the Army.
That's correct, isn't it, dear?
No, of course, Julia, but listen to the rest of it. Go ahead, John.
But Judge Hoare set it up so that the various states in which these Army expenditures were to be made had no possible way of benefiting locally. The usual graft was made impossible.
It sounds perfect.
It was perfect. Until Congress caught on and sent the bill back to committee, where it will undoubtedly die. You know, John, I'm going to order that bill to the floor and see what happens.
Easy now, Mr. President. Congress isn't your favorite charger, you know.
Well, a touch of the whip.
No. Not now, sir. Next term, perhaps. For now, just ride with them.
Is there some other way to get the appropriation?
Oh, we'll find a way, I'm sure.
Well, we'll see. Meanwhile, you watch. Eben Hoare will have us in hot water again before you can say Jack Robinson. Oh, now, Julia, where's that cold chicken? That at least won't talk back.
Now, see here, Judge Hoare.
Our delegation thinks we ought to reason with you.
And you, Congressman, don't see the use of reason. Is that it?
Ever hear of the immovable post, sir?
I have, and the irresistible force.
Congress has some force, too, Judge. Even where the Attorney General is concerned.
You're quite a diplomat, Mr. Bradford. You came here, apparently, to request something of me. You begin with threats.
I came because my colleagues believed I would take a firm stand with you.
Perhaps if you'd tell me what you're being so firm about.
It's Tom Zachary.
Zachary? Yes, I know that name somewhere.
He's a constituent of ours, sir, from Massachusetts. And you refused him an appointment.
As a federal district attorney, yes, I remember now.
We think you ought to reconsider that refusal.
Sorry, that I cannot do.
We most firmly request that you do so.
How many different ways can a man say no?
In fact, we demand that you say yes.
Mr. Bradford, may I remind you to watch your manners, and may I also remind you of the old adage, set a thief to catch a thief.
Well, the colors.
Congressman, when I sat on the bench in Massachusetts, Tom Zachary appeared before me to defend some of the worst criminals in the state. His only recommendation was that he knew certain people and might be able to obtain a fix. I will not have such a man under my jurisdiction to represent the Department of Justice and the government of the United States. Good day, Congressman.
Mr. Cox, Well, it's more than mannerly of you to call to see the president, and at a time like this. But I do hate to disturb him. It's the first rest he's had in 3 days.
General Rawlins' death was a blow to all of us. Most of all to the president. The cabinet does want him to know how we feel.
John was close to us. A good friend.
He almost worked himself to death.
You don't know, Mr. Cox. The evenings he spent here in this room with the president, cautioning, helping, working hand in glove as they did during the war.
Great loss.
John had a special place in the president's life. Is there anyone to fill it?
General Sherman is the obvious man, ma'am. A fine Secretary of War.
But hardly guide, counselor, and friend for the president. No man is indispensable, they say, but I'm afraid we shall have to trust to heaven to find a replacement for John Wall.
You, Julia?
Yes, dear. Right here.
Oh, good. Oh, Julia, I'm very tired tonight.
What was it today?
Oh, the usual deputation from Congress.
With demand?
Just about.
But not exactly.
Not exactly, but it adds up to the same thing. Ben Bradford was the spokesman. They'll not deal any longer with the Department of Justice.
Again?
Yes, again. There was a lot of talk about the lack of Southern representation in the cabinet. Oh, so many things. What it gets down to is a do-nothing Congress until Judge Hoar mends his ways or resigns.
It's unbelievable.
Maybe, but it's true. If only I had John to talk it over with. After you've worked with a man as long as I did with John, then have him snatched away.
Isn't there something?
Oh, yes, there's something. I can fire Eben Hoar, one of the best public servants the country ever had. But, Julia, I won't do it, that's all.
If you think that's best.
Oh, actually, I don't know what to think.
What does your own conscience say, my dear?
My conscience says fight. But my horse sense tells me it will get me exactly no place. Bills piling up in Congress, everything at a standstill because appropriations are blocked. Problems with Great Britain unsolved. I may win, but the country will lose. And you, Julia, you were the one who once said, must you bring the office upstairs with you? I don't bring it, Julia. It comes along under its own power.
In just a moment, we'll come back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Few of us stop to realize that the United States Army and Air Force not only work to protect the peace, but work to improve living conditions for all of us. Army and Air Force men are working continually on research projects that will contribute not only to national security, but will make for a better peacetime living. Men in the Army and Air Force today are working on development of all-weather and push-button flying. They're also working to improve radar techniques and supersonic flight. The enlisted men working on these and countless other projects were trained in the world's best technical schools. So when you look at a man in uniform today, you're looking at a highly trained man. Pay him your respect. Remember, these men are until Selective Service by law, the volunteer enlistment program of the U.S. Army and Air Force is still being continued. Now back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Perhaps you've already guessed which president this happened to, but wait and see if you are right. Well, matters seemed to stand at a complete impasse. Congress sat on its hands and the leaders of my administration went ahead with our problems as best they could. Then something came up, which, as I told you, that evening. So I think we're going to bring matters to a head at last, my dear.
How so?
Oh, it's, well, I may have mentioned to you that one of the few things Congress did this spring was to pass an act increasing the judges of the Circuit Court and permitting the 9 justices of the Supreme Court. Well, the appointments are due. I've got to nominate those men.
Judge Hoare will have something to say about it, will he not?
Yes, of course. It's his function to say something. It's my duty to listen. And as it happens, almost every senator has a candidate of his own as well.
How does the Senate get into this?
Have you forgotten, my dear, the Senate must confirm my appointments?
Oh, heavens,
yes. Yes. But look here, Julia. If Judge Hoare concurs on some of the nominees, that's a step toward getting him and Congress and closer together.
You think there's a chance of that?
Well, I'm hoping, Julia. I have all my toes and fingers crossed. When I see Eben Hoare in the morning, I'll... Well, Judge, have you looked over the list?
Yes, Mr. President.
And what do you find? Anyone who comes up to your standards at the federal bench?
The candidates must be good lawyers and honest as the day is long.
You're evading my question, Judge.
Well, I feel rather in the position of the parish committee which went to a divinity school in search for a minister. They were told that the students fell readily into 3 classes. Those who had talents without piety, those who had piety without talents, and those who had neither.
I see what you mean. What did the committee do?
Went elsewhere, of course.
Oh, I see. And you'd like me to go elsewhere, too, huh?
Yes, Mr. President. As you suggested, I have prepared a list of possible appointees myself.
Mm-hmm. Here. I see. Well, our friends on Capitol Hill won't like this, Judge.
I'm thinking of the good of the country as a whole.
So am I, Judge.
I've never had any doubt of that, sir. I'm sure we both want the same things.
Even though our positions in the government sometimes force us to approach the goal from different directions?
Meaning a compromise, Mr. President?
Do you realize we're in politics?
Well, that has been impressed upon me many times from many sources in recent weeks, Mr. President.
But you still persist in your refusal to compromise.
A compromise of such a sort, sir, would be a compromise of everything I have believed in and fought for all my life. This list of candidates for the bench, Mr. President, is a perfect example.
Judge, I respect and honor your position. Exactly what I'm going to do about it, I don't know. Or for that matter, what I'm going to do about you yourself. I think I've got the answer.
The answer to what, dear?
Well, this conflict between Judge Hoare and Congress. I can't ask him to resign, but I can move him upstairs.
How, dear?
Well, I've 2 places open under the new law on the Supreme Court. I want Ed Stanton for one, and I'll put Judge Hoare in the other. That's the one place in the government for a 100% honest man.
Yes, I hope so.
I know so, Julia.
I'm just wondering... Well, never mind.
Worry about what?
The Senate confirms those appointments like all the others. Am I right?
Exactly right. But don't you worry, my dear. The Senate will be so glad to get Eben Hoare out of their collective hair, they'll confirm him unanimously in 5 minutes.
Good morning, Mr. President.
Well, Senator Johns, and what brings this call about?
As you know, I'm chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Yes?
Mr. President, we are prepared to endorse all your nominees except one.
Which one?
Obviously, sir, you really do not expect the Senate to confirm the nomination of a man who has been in conflict with Congress since his first appointment.
Are you referring to Judge Hoare?
Of course. In addition, the Senate wishes me to urge upon you the appointment of a resident of one of the southern states.
Senator Johns, my patience is just about at an end.
And so is ours, Mr. President.
Are you threatening me, sir?
I am saying, Mr. President, that unless Judge Hall resigns and is replaced at once with a man from the South, absolutely nothing the president requests will be done by Congress.
You are taking over executive power, Senator.
The system of checks and balances written into the Constitution is now in operation.
Senator, the president has some power in his own administration.
Subject to the will of the Congress in many cases. This is one of those cases, Mr. President. And the will of Congress is that Judge Hall go back to Massachusetts.
Please, dear, you promised me that tonight you'd relax.
Yes, of course I promised. And I promised myself I'd support Eben Hoare to the limit.
Well, you're doing that, as far as I can see.
Yes, I am doing it. And then the question arises, where is that limit?
Have you discussed this with your cabinet at all?
No, naturally not. I know their answer.
Which is?
Fight it out with Congress.
Well, then...
It's not as simple as that, my dear. Government business is rolling to a standstill because Congress refuses to act. Eben Hoare is important to the country. The principle back of keeping him in the government is even more important. But the welfare of the nation is a whole cause for compromise with Congress. And that's important, too.
How long can this deadlock go on?
Until one side or the other gives in.
Sometimes I wonder if it wouldn't be a better world if all children suddenly were daughters.
Women live the art of compromise, I know. But somehow I will have to live with my own conscience.
I wish I could help you, my dear.
I know, Julia. Bless you. But this is one case where the president stands or falls by his own action. And until that action is taken, Julia, there'll be no relaxation, I'm afraid, any place in the White House. Eben, I hope you understand my position as far as your resignation is concerned.
Expected as it was, Mr. President, it came as, well, rather a shock.
When you dislike an operation, you set it over quickly.
Yes, sir.
I want you to know that my personal feelings towards you have not altered one whit.
Thank you, sir.
When this is blown over, I hope you'll be willing to serve your country and me in some other capacity, even.
If time and my current position will permit, Mr. President.
The Congress will have no excuse now for not cooperating. The good of the nation as a whole, the insistence on Southern representation in the cabinet. I hope you understand.
Yes, sir. My highest wish is for the success of your administration, Mr. President. No personal interest of mine can be permitted to stand in the way.
Thank you, Eben.
May I take the liberty, sir?
No liberty taken. Go right ahead, Eben.
I know the kind of men who have forced my removal, sir. I hope you have chosen my successor for your own sake, sir. Because if not, the pressures they will attempt to use can prove most embarrassing to all concerned.
I know exactly what you mean, Eben. I've given some thought to the matter. As Amos Ackerman of Georgia seems a logical choice. I believe you approved him, both as a federal attorney and as a circuit judge.
An honest man and a capable lawyer, sir. And he does reside in Georgia, doesn't he?
Oh, yes. And this ought to please you. He was born in New Hampshire.
Well, a compromise within a compromise, Mr. President.
Exactly, even exactly.
May I say, sir, that at this point I am hardly the man to pass upon the qualifications of an attorney general.
I see. Again, may I say how sorry I am. And may I ask that you shake my hand? Julia?
Yes, my dear?
Julia, I don't know quite how to express this.
Go on and say it, dear. The papers won't hear you, so polished phrases aren't necessary.
This blessed sanctuary, the second floor of the White House. What I'm trying to say, Julia, is I think I've discovered history.
What?
I'm serious, my dear. I think I've discovered history. And I hope it turns out to be the refuge I need.
Your place in history is secure.
Oh, is it? When I served in the Army, I never thought much about it. When they elected me president, I was too busy to give it any thought. But now, I've compromised my own conscience for what I think is the greater good of the greatest number. And I find myself wondering how all this will be recorded in the history books.
How else can they record it but by telling the truth?
History records facts, Julia. Rarely the reasons back of those facts. When they write down the president suddenly requested the resignation of his attorney general, I hope and trust they will find the space to add, against the dictates of his conscience and with a heavy heart. Well, you've probably figured out by now who I was when all that happened. It really did happen, you know, and I'll tell you the answer in just a moment.
Brush up on your musical memory, for who knows, you might be called on Stop the Music. Stop the Music is the name of ABC's sensational new show that telephones Americans to spot a tune title and win a prize. Yes, every Sunday evening, this great full-hour show comes to you over most ABC stations. As MC, you hear Bert Parks. Parks speaks by phone to a number of persons in all parts of the nation to ask if they can identify the tunes being played by Harry Salter's orchestra. Should a listener's answer be correct, he or she receives a handsome merchandise prize plus an opportunity to name a mystery melody. Don't miss Stop the Music when it's heard this evening over most of these same ABC stations. Now, here again is Edward Arnold.
Well, the events you heard about in this story took place in 1869 and 1870, during the first half of the administration of President Ulysses S. Grant. President Grant was literally forced by Congress to remove Attorney General Ebenezer Hoar, but it is interesting and important to note that the President did keep his promise to call Judge Hoar back into the service of the country. This story illustrates, more than anything else, that the presidency is a 24-hour-a-day job. He is always bringing the office upstairs in the White House. Come and see me again next week, won't you? I'll have a story for you then that I'm sure you'll enjoy. Goodbye.
Edward Arnold appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of Julia Misbehave, starring Greer Garson and Walter Pidgeon. Mr. President was created by Robert G. Jennings. It was produced and directed by Leonard Reed. This story by Ira Merriam was suggested by incidents in the administration of President Ulysses S. Grant. Music was composed and conducted by Basil Adler.
Be sure to listen again next week when the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Edward Arnold with another interesting and factual story of Mr. President. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.